Hey everybody, welcome to another wonderful episode of GVN Live. I'm Fight Club Hobbs. We have Gamer Keith, we have Mark B, and welcome back. Emily, how you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm fabulous. So to start off, let's just see how everyone's been doing since the last couple of weeks. Let's start off with you, actually. How you been?
Me?
Yep.
I have been crazy busy because, as you guys know, I was in vacation. I was in Florida for a week and a half, and then I came home, and it has been nonstop catch up on work and work. But other than that, you know, been finding time to play games here and there. Pokemon Go, everybody should get it. I also came up with a realization last night. I was playing Street Fighter V, and like, I just wanted to put some music on, so I've been, like, really hooked on Pokemon right now. So I put the Pokemon TV theme song on, like, the full-length song. And I realized that I play Street Fighter V significantly better when blasting the Pokemon theme song. And I also decided I was going to compete in the KOF 14 tournament at Summer Jam X. So... which I can talk about that decision later, but because it has to do with CEO. But
And we got a new segment just for you that we're going to be going into in a little bit. So how about you, Gamer Keith? How have you been?
I've been pretty awesome since the last show. I've been playing Pokemon Go. Just pretty much. Let's say that we've all been playing Pokemon Go.
No, we haven't.
Oh yeah. It's because
I have a Windows phone.
Oh, you have a Windows phone, and Mark is just a.
And that is the greatest reason why.
No, I'm playing it.
Okay,
I'm playing it.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, come on. You gotta get on the same wavelength as the rest of us.
No, I'm waiting until Sun and Moon come out. No, thank you. Sorry.
Oh, I'll be playing Sun and Moon too. I'll be playing all of them at once.
I don't need to risk my kids. I don't need to risk my car driving down 95 South just to catch a damn Mewtwo or something like that. No, thank you. No.
Doom is pretty awesome still. Then I was playing a little bit of Ratchet and Clank, which I just got on sale on the PS4. So that's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. The new Ratchet. Or not new, I guess you would say. It was a remake for the movie, or the movie based on the game or whatever that's going on with that. And that's really been about it as far as on the gaming front really is concerned.
All right. Now we come to Chatty Cathy himself. How you doing, Mark? What you been up to?
Oh, I'm just Jim fucking Dandy, let me tell you. I've mostly been working, but in my downtime, we did the live stream for Tokyo Mirage Sessions on Saturday and made some progress there. And in the meantime, for review, I have been working on Sonic Comey, Communications with Sonico.
Okay.
Nice.
Which is a combination visual model / photography simulator.
Interesting.
I'm just understanding how this character. Hatsune Miku is, you know, an idol in the sense of a Vocaloid, but the Sonico, she was just a mascot for a gas company, and now she's blown up to multiple video games and an anime series. What is up?
Well, Nitro Plus wasn't a gas company. They were originally a video gaming company who predominantly made like visual novels, some hentai, some not, and they created her as a mascot for a music festival that they were running, because that's a thing that you do in Japan. You make visual novels and run music festivals, I guess.
But it's a Japanese way of life.
For whatever Japanese reason, the character stuck, and she's become like their most popular character. So they have three different games based around her, all of which are in that same take pictures of her in various states of undress while also talking to her to achieve different endings. In addition to her having her own anime, like CDs based around the band that she's in, just all kinds of different shit.
All kinds of different shit.
Kind of like Cutie Honey.
Nah, Cutie Honey was like
she fought
an etchy anime.
Sonico just plays instruments.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. What have I been up to? Pretty much just trying to get through my back catalog. I just actually picked up Project Diva 2, Project Diva F Second, and I've been playing that for like the last few days, and that game is insanely addicting. I blame my friend Joe for that. Damn you, Joe. Damn you so much. On top of that, really, it's just been pretty much just a lot of work. I came back from vacation. I was at the Too Many Games Expo a couple weekends ago. In fact, actually, I think the last podcast was after E3, was before the Too Many Games, so I didn't really get a chance to talk about that, but the convention was pretty good. I mean, you had some internet celebrities like, you know, what's up, Desk Gaming? You had internet celebrities like the Nostalgia Critic. You had James Rolfe, the Angry Video Game Nerd. You had other people there, like the Game Chasers. You know, there's a lot of stuff there. In fact, what's his
name? Alpha Omega Sid come this year?
Alpha Omega Sin, I believe, was there, but he might have been a guest. I also believe as a guest as well, but like he was just walking around, was Bennett the Sage, who I would like to have met. I love his anime reviews. He used to review games long before he started Anime Abandoned, but he's actually probably one of my favorite like online critics, as it is. Now, moving on, so shall we get started on our new segment, Emily?
Sure.
All right, let's cue that intro.
Hey guys, so you already technically met me, but I'll just introduce myself again. So some people who know me by my gaming name, which is Jamelian, although you can call me Jem too, because they call me that for short, or my real name, Emily, whatever, float your boat there. But today I'm going to talk about three different topics about what's going on currently in the FGC. First things first, kind of like a past thing that happened. I was in Florida for about a week and a half at the end of June, and I did get to attend CEO for the first time. Most of the FGC tournaments that I attend are up north because it's hard to get because that's where I live, and it's hard to get money, as most people know, to travel, you know, anywhere that's down south or across the country. But nonetheless, I did get to go because it kind of interconnected with my vacation and I was near the area. That being said, so I guess for me, I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting when I went, but I mean, it was definitely really hype. It was pretty much like all the tournaments that I've been to before, just, you know, the style was a little bit different. And I met Xavier Woods. That was probably like the biggest highlight. I met, Xavier Woods, for those of you that are into WWE, and, Kenny Omega. So that was a really great experience. I geeked out like a total fangirl when I saw them, but it was pretty freaking cool. I had a nice conversation with them on Sunday. So at least at this point, I can say when I went to CEO, I had like a 15-minute conversation with Xavier Woods and Kenny Omega. So that's,
does this mean you'll get him as guests on our show next time?
I cannot say anything.
Darn.
She can't confirm nor deny that at this point.
I cannot confirm or deny. All I can say is they were both really, really nice, and I really enjoyed getting to meet them. That's something I never expected I would have.
Come on, what am I paying you for?
I gotta be honest, I'm more jealous that you met Kenny Omega.
Have you start paying me, maybe?
Oh.
Oh.
JK, JK.
Don't worry, but I'll start sending you that Monopoly check in the mail.
All right.
Quit interrupting the poor woman.
But it's better than nothing. Yeah, seriously. All right. Definitely watching the intros, that was like a cool element, you know, because basically for those of you that follow WWE, NXT is in Orlando. It's not that far away. The WWE Performance Center is down there, and pretty much everybody that's in WWE, I just spoke really fast, lives in Orlando. That's kind of like the home area. So Alex Jabali does kind of like this
boxing wrestling ring thing.
What?
He has a boxing ring? Oh, it's a
wrestling
ring?
Yeah, yeah. He had several. No, it was one just ring. I don't know why I said several. He had like one like main ring. And there was like a little like walkway. Like it was almost like a stage, like it was up, like that you could like walk across. Like so basically everybody that came in had like special entrances and things like that that went on stream. So that was cool to see. Basically they could do it to any tune, similar to like when they come out on like Raw or SmackDown and have their own special opening. But really, you know what? The one thing that really surprised me is despite some of the differences, it really was like any other major tournament. I don't know what I was expecting. You know, you hear a lot of different stuff. But then when you finally are able to travel outside, it really is just the same thing with differences in their own kind of twists on it, if that makes any sense. But like I said, highlight was meeting famous wrestlers. That was my highlight as CEO. Next topic I want to talk about is, for those of you that don't know me, I am the media marketing partnership sponsorship person for Big E Gaming. So we've been doing events, Street Fighter V monthly events for Red Bull. It's called Red Bull Proving Grounds. They're in multiple different areas of the country, and Philly is one of them. Big E Gaming is doing them. We just finished up our second one yesterday, and it was definitely a success. We had more people come out. Our next one's going to be on August 13th. But the one thing I wanted to mention about it is a great opportunity for players that don't get the opportunity at majors to possibly qualify for Capcom Cup or for, like, you know, Red Bull Battlegrounds, to have the opportunity to basically compete there. So basically, they're competing for points. We had an event in June. We had an event just this past weekend, and we have two more. And basically, the top three who get the most points at total at the end of all the events get flown out by Red Bull to Seattle to compete in Red Bull Battlegrounds, the final championship of that. And for the possibility to get an all-expenses-paid trip to compete in Capcom Cup. So I think it's a really great opportunity, because when you go to majors, one of the most difficult things is the fact that you got players from all over that are coming to a premier event or a ranking event because they really want to go, obviously. They want to qualify for Capcom Cup. But you have the players that are really good that don't necessarily get that opportunity and miss it because you have hundreds and hundreds of people from all over the world that are coming to compete. So what this does is this gives small, like, I don't want to say smaller communities because there's a lot of players there, but it gives more like local communities and the surrounding states the opportunity that they might not necessarily get at a major to compete. And it kind of unites everybody. So basically everybody that's a part of the Red Bull Proving Grounds across the United States, we support all of each other. So we're, you know, retweeting their events, they're retweeting ours, they're supporting us and spreading our events around, and we're, you know, sharing them as well. So, you know,
I know... That like a really good opportunity to give people who don't have that kind of direct exposure to wider varieties of players the chances they have to develop better and maybe become top-tier players.
Definitely, because we have a lot of pro players like that that do come out, and we have casual sessions go on beforehand. So basically the way it works is our doors open at 3:00, and you can play casuals all the way up until when the tournament starts. Registration will typically start around 5:00 and the tournament starts at 7:00. So you have all that time, and we have pro players coming from New York. We have players, I think we had from Delaware, Maryland, New Jersey, multiple different states surrounding. But, you know, I think we had those of you know Arturo or Sabin, he won our tournament on Saturday. L.I. Joe was there. L.I. Joe won our one in June. So I have no idea. Right now it seems like New York is stealing our thunder over here. But that also gives players the opportunity, like you said, Mark, who might not at a major get the opportunity to play them. They get it here because it's just nothing but casuals, and it's a little bit smaller of an event. So it is more a one-on-one. In regards to Big E Gaming, does the New Day know about this? Does the New Day know about Big E Gaming? Yes, they do. that I can tell you. They know who Big E Gaming is. just based on my conversation with them. They were very familiar with who we were. So that was a nice thing to hear. They're like, oh, yeah, I've heard about you guys. I'm like, oh, yay. So, I mean, I can't say any more than that. But they were really nice. The last thing I'm going to talk about, which I know everybody who's been following the FGC wants to know about, is Evo. So those of you that know, Evo is this weekend. It starts officially on Friday. It's tournament day one. And I'm going to start off saying this because this is probably one of the coolest things. Not only is Evo's finals day going to be filmed in an esports arena, but it's going to be, well, Street Fighter V is at least. Street Fighter V finals are going to be shown on ESPN. So this is about, I mean, let me go back here for a moment. So we have kind of been seeing a little bit of the FGC kind of start to make its way onto TV with MKX being on the CW. But to get a spot on ESPN for Evo in an esports arena is probably one of the biggest changes and shifts for the FGC that we've seen. I'm hoping that this means across the board that more and more tournaments and events are going to start being shown. I think all major events at some point should have the opportunity.
I expect NEC16 to be there. Right? NEC16 on ESPN2.
NEC16 happened last December, right?
Or 17. I'm not keeping track. That's how long he's been running it.
NEC17 is coming up in December. Speaking of which, I'm not going to talk too much on this, but NEC17 is going to be our largest event to date. It is going to be unlike anything you guys have seen before. I am so excited, and I can't go into detail, but man, I am excited, and I can't wait until we can start to unveil some of this for you guys, because it is going to be, all I'm going to say is we have 54,000 square feet. It's a huge amount of space, and believe me, we are filling it.
That's a lot of room for people to sit down.
I can't even begin to tell you the hype around it, but all in due time. It's coming. It's coming soon. Meanwhile, Summer Jam is next month. So that is a Capcom Pro Tour ranking event. That's also another Biggie Gaming event, in case you guys didn't know, but considering you're asking me, well, wait, that's you, Mark, asking me about, no, wait, that's not. Considering people were asking me about Biggie Gaming, obviously you guys already know who we are, but, but that is coming up. Like I said, it's a Capcom Pro Tour ranking event. We are powered by Twitch. Shout out to them. All of our events, this year. So, Winter Brawl X was, Summer Jam will be, and so will NEC17. Back to Evo here. I'll tell you what. So Evo has record-breaking numbers. Over 5,000 Street Fighter V entrants, let alone just for that game. Not to mention some of the other games being in the thousands. I mean, I have to say here, between spectators and vendors and everything else, they're going to have well over 10,000. People. Oh, wow. At Evo this year, I suspect, between all the players and everything else, because already with the players added up, it's already close to 10,000. And I know that there's a bunch of people going that aren't playing too. So when you factor all of that in, this is going to be the largest Evo ever that we've had so far. And it's going to be the craziest. Can you imagine how cramped that space might be? With almost 10,000 people being in that hotel. I'm not sure how it's going to go down. I've never been there. I'm pretty sure it's a large hotel, so they should be fine. But, I mean, it's definitely something you want to tune into this weekend and help out. So, like, when Evo Street Fighter V finals are going on, play it on Twitch. All right? Have it up. And also, if you do have cable, play ESPN2 and put that on too. This is a great opportunity, and we want to show them that we can get the numbers. So that's my speech on that. We want to show them that we really care about the fact that it's going to be on ESPN2. And, like, unfortunately, I don't have cable, but I'm going to tell my family and everybody to turn it on. So that'll make up for it. They won't know what they're watching, but, you know. So that's it for now, unless anybody has any FGC-related questions for me that I can answer in the next 5 minutes.
Oh, questions? Well. I thought you were going to ask if there's anybody else anybody wanted to mention, which I do have. I got something I can mention, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, over the weekend, of course, was the Dead or Alive Festival. And last year at NEC 16, we had Japan invading, and Japan won the tournament. Well, we returned the favor, and Excalibur Blades, an American, won a Japanese tournament over there. So, hey, USA!
I saw something about that. Unfortunately, like I said, we were doing the Red Bull event, and I was working the event on Saturday, so I really I wasn't
also on top
aware
of
other events at the time. Cause
on top of that, because I'm also a fan of the Dead or Alive franchise, they made two big announcements. One is the fact that they are going to still support the game with a new DLC costume pack based on Attack on Titan, which is pretty cool, including an Attack on Titan-themed stage. And the other one is another big crossover character. It's Mai Shiranui from King of Fighters is going to be in Dead or Alive 5 Last Round.
Oh, sweet.
That is fucking awesome.
Definitely.
So, there you go. If you wanted to see what a good 3D model of Mai looks like, well, there you go. At least Team Ninja will
Speaking of Mai, let me take a step back here, because I was talking with them earlier about this. So, when I was at CEO, I got the opportunity to play King of Fighters 14, which, by the way, is going to be at Summer Jam, and we're holding a special KOF 14 tournament that I plan on entering. And the reason I decided to enter it is this. So I didn't realize I was playing on stream my couple matches. I think I played like two matches, but I ended up winning my first one. And my team, typically when I played KOF 13, is my... most of the time I always use my Kula and some random character because I've never been able to settle. Sometimes it's Leona, sometimes it's another guy character. I've had difficulty finding a third. I guess I'm going to have to figure that out. But anyway, I played a lot of Mai, so I was picking up on her fairly quick, and I had beaten the first match, and there was some guys making some noise behind me, and Wednesday I said, "Who's player one?" And I said, "You mean who's playing Mai?" And he goes, "Yes." I'm like, "That's me." And he goes, "All right." He's like, "Respect." And so to get that, I mean, let me be honest. When I've ever been at an event, I play Street Fighter V competitively. At least, I play Street Fighter competitively right now. Street Fighter V, I'm like, on right now. And I really felt like I connected with KOF 14. I don't know. I got really hype. I was excited about it. I want to play it. I want to compete in the tournament, and the game's not even out yet. I mean, like, literally those two matches was all I played of KOF 14. So I'll definitely be entering that. And I think everybody, if you have the opportunity to play KOF 14 before it comes out, do it. Because you won't regret it. I mean, there was some iffiness in the beginning, but
Mostly complained about the way the game looked. Like, it looked like a PS2 game. Who cares?
In the beginning, but I guarantee you it's one of those games. It looks amazing in person. So it's one of those games where, like, video, you're like, okay, yeah, it's decent looking. They improved it a lot, but in person, it's one of those ones that looks better in person than looks better on the screen. But I really enjoyed it. It played really well, and it's not even the final version yet, so I'm excited to see what they come up with. And I'm going to end this with a funny story. I realized last night that while I
story
was playing...
Story time.
That while, that while I was playing Street Fighter V, I suddenly became good, or at least significantly better, with all of the characters when I was blasting the Pokemon...
Sorry, comment in the chat.
...theme song. So that's it. Every time I blast the Pokemon theme song, the TV version,
is it kind of like your Rocky?
It must be because I was singing it. I was happy when I was playing Street Fighter 2. I feel like I'm never happy anymore when I play Street Fighter 5. Play Street Fighter 4, I'm fine. I'm like, yeah, T-Hawk, I'm good. But Street Fighter 5, I'm like, I'm just playing this because I feel like I have to, you know. And I don't know, I put it on and I was all happy and singing and cheery. I don't know if it's because of Pokemon Go, but yeah.
Speaking of which, let's we're gonna hold off on the main topic at hand for a little bit more. We're gonna cock tease you people some more before the debate begins.
I'm all about the cock tease.
Yeah, so we're gonna talk about this nightmare that just began a couple days ago, Pokemon Go, and you three are playing it. I seem to have been spared. Thank you for having thanks for inventing the Windows Phone, Microsoft. So, your thoughts on this dangerous new drug that is taking over the world?
Oh man, I don't know if you want me to go first, but I will go first.
All right, well, we'll go with Mark
first.
Ladies first.
I can't.
She really has to talk about it. Oh man,
I can't hold it in.
She's taking over my show. Holy crap!
Hey man, all right.
How do I kick you out of chat?
Hey.
Go ahead.
I'm not gonna get to talk pretty much during your Final Fantasy debate. So, all right.
That's true. That's a fair trade.
If you are a Pokemon fan, this is like your dream come true, okay? So I've been playing since Gen 1 came out. And when I first, you know, you always sit there and you're like, damn, wouldn't it be so cool if you could, like, if Pokemon were, like, real? I mean, so obviously they can't be real, but, you know, I guarantee you, everyone who's a Pokemon fan, you've thought it at some point in your life, I wish Pokemon were real. Because I have.
Abso-frickin-lutely.
Right? Okay. So when I found out about this app at first, I remember being, hell yeah, I'm definitely going to get that. And then, but then I saw, and I was also wondering at the same time, how the hell are they going to pull this off? You know what I mean? Like, I was skeptical. I'm like, I don't know how they're going to pull this off, but it's an amazing thing. So then it finally comes out. Oh my God, I am like obsessed. It's so hard when I'm at work because all I can think about is like looking at my phone like, okay, I gotta go Pokemon hunting, but like I can't. So it is free. It's all in-app purchases and there's Pokestops everywhere and there's like a GPS and it like knows where you are, which is like freaking cool because like you walk or you drive, the little like thing. Really? I see the face you put in there, all right?
No, not for you. It's for what God of Zig said.
I thought you were hating.
No. I would say it straight to you.
Okay. It's good to know at least. Honestly, I mean, it's so hard to explain, but it's like amazing. So basically the GPS is like cartoon form, so like you can create like your little person or whatever. So the GPS knows where you are and there's little like outlines where the houses are and there's Pokestops and like gyms and stuff like that. It's not until a Pokemon shows up and I guess you don't click on it, but you kind of do with like your finger. And that's when your camera turns on. And literally, like, you'll just be sitting here and I'll pull it up and there'll be like a Rattata, like, on my floor, but only like through the camera. And you know what? It's interesting to me. I should have expected this because Nintendo is actually, there's been games that have explored with this before with Nintendo. I have the Spirit something. Maybe it's just called the Spirit.
Oh, Spirit Camera. That was, it's made of Fatal Frame, the really, really great series that nobody's ever played. Really scary. Really, really scary.
Yeah, so I have that 3DS game, and that kind of played a little bit with it, too. There was a camera involved that did a similar thing when you were playing it on the 3DS. There are some signs in some stores because, you know, people are getting annoyed. I know the first day it was released in Australia, a police department told them they didn't need to come inside in order to gain the perks of the Pokestop. They could just sit out there and they asked them not to come in, but they were at least supportive of the game.
Considering how the nation is run by Jedi Knights, according to recent political polls. So, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there isn't, like, it's an experience for itself. Like, I mean, you have to, like, you have to download it and play it to understand, like, what?
No, I was just acknowledging a comment that you loved Fatal Frame. I just want to say thank you.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those games where, like, if you love Pokemon, like, you'll get it. Like, I don't even know how to explain it except for the fact that, like, it's as close to Pokemon in real life as you're going to get.
The one thing that I just I love Pokemon Go, the whole AR, the augmented reality, so that way when you are playing it, like you said, Emily, is that it's awesome. So you feel a little bit more real life that you're actually accomplishing something. The thing I find hilarious the most is that most of these Pokestops are actually churches, which I find hilarious. It's like, you need Jesus in your life. Now go play Pokemon. And that actually brings to the next thing is, like you said, is that the app hasn't even been out for a week yet, and it's already making waves. Like, Nintendo is pretty much probably made billions off of this alone, so any funding that the NX needed has pretty much just been, like, cornerstoned at this moment.
Yeah, like, Nintendo's going to hit that $100 million sales figure, $100 million units sold figure that they estimated for the Wii U. Did you hear about that report last week?
I did not, is the whole thing, is that... the thing is with Nintendo is that right now they're going in a completely different direction, and this was, like, really... This was their big thing. Like, Miitomo, or Miitomo, or whatever the...
Miitomo.
Miitomo, like, I think that kind of was... That was decent, but that really went off with... it wasn't really well-recepted, but Pokemon's now out there.
I was obsessed with Miitomo for a certain period of time, and then it's one of those games where it, like... I hit that point where I'm like, "Nah, I'm over it. There's like nothing new with it that you can like do. It's like after a while, it's the same thing over and over again. And I got tired of answering questions, and I'm like, you know.
Well, Crystal Sharks is like, me too. Both sucks.
We're like, is two that?
Well, so well, the thing you said reminded me too much of. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Mark. It reminded me too much of the DS version of Me Too, or of the Me Walk and whatnot. So that's it.
So I guess I'm going to have to be the bad guy here about Pokemon Go a little bit.
No, okay. If you're going to bring up the servers and the freezing, it's annoying, but they'll fix it.
I don't like the fact that if you use a consumable item and the servers take a dump, they seem to have nothing in place for you on that. Like, I mean, I play a few free-to-play games online, and some of them are terrible. Plants vs. Zombies 2. But some of them are really good. Brave Frontier. If Brave Frontier has a problem, they will get you a reward, like, and they'll say, hey, we're sorry that this happened. Even if you didn't know that there was a problem, you'll just get stuff that's like, hey, sorry that this happened to you. Have some stuff. And I haven't heard anything about, like, any type of compensation, which is problematic if you're selling items and people pay money for them, and those items burn out without the person being able to get back onto the server.
Right,
so not great.
So I do want to speak a little bit about this because I had a similar situation happen to me the first night. So the first night I had it, I was like obsessed. And of course, you know me, I'm like, oh my God, I have to buy a couple coins. I mean, you know, not spend like $4.99. You know, it's not that much money.
That's how it starts, Emily. It starts $4.99, and then next thing you know, it's $2,000.
I've been good. All right. So I made the $4.99, and what happened? The server crashed. So it crashed while it was loading in the middle of loading my coins. I had to start it over. The coins weren't there. So I called Google because I'm like, bitch, I want my coins. If I don't get my coins, I want my money back. Google pretty much told me, Google customer service. They said to me, is this about Pokemon Go? And I said, I assume you've been getting phone calls. And they're like, all day. It has been nothing. She was like, it has been nothing but Pokemon Go all day. Every single call is Pokemon Go. So if that gives you any indication, Google was being slammed with people playing Pokemon Go. Probably similar situations to me. So they gave me a refund, and then I woke up the next morning and I had my coins. So I don't know if it's like a slow process. They're still trying to work out their glitches. I'm sure at some point they will be able to start, like, you know, working out some type of a compensation or plan, or eventually you'll get your...
Catch
a John Cena and just put him up against like a Pikachu. See how that fans out.
Well, this is the thing, is that I think that it was kind of rushed to a certain extent, and they really probably did not estimate the sheer numbers that this was going to take. Like, if anything, before it was out even in America, like you said, is that people were downloading the APK from Australia, from Europe, and tried to get onto it. So I think that this was kind of like, now they're going to just have to fix it as they go along. And like you said, is the server crashing sucks. And then One of the things that I've experienced with the server crash is, like, I literally will catch a Pokemon, and then it's like, is it in my inventory? Is it not? Luckily, they're always there, but still, point being is that I think they're, at this juncture, just going to fix it as they go, because they kind of have no choice. They can't even take it down and be like, oh, let's fix the issues that are going on here. No. But the server thing, I can't even be mad about, because they probably did not anticipate this by the slightest that it was going to be.
Which is totally fair. Those are like the least issues that I have with the game.
Yeah, what are the big issues you have with the game?
No, I mean,
the big issues I have with the game are people who live in a city are immediately a million times better off than people who live in the suburbs or the country.
Yeah, right? There's nothing around my apartment complex. I have to go to like a busy area for something to be like. So like the more heavily populated areas have more of like the Pokemon stops and the gyms, but the areas that are like,
it's not even just that, they have more Pokemon in general. Like, I live in a suburb of New Jersey, and there
I'm sorry.
Is...
Hey, watch yourself.
Hey, at least it's better than where you live. The best thing that came out of Philly was an empty bus.
Hey!
Yeah, well, it's the best thing that came out of Jersey was Bon Jovi, and we want him back there.
I mean, I live in a suburb outside of Philly, but hey.
Hey, you know what? I don't know what to tell you, man, but there's only one boss, and it ain't Sasha Banks. Kiss my ass.
Hi. You look
like a
Thank
testicle
you, Mark.
Piled onto another testicle.
Thank you.
Says the cue ball with the red head. That's
hey,
the best
what?
I got.
I think this shit looked good. But anyway.
Yeah, with those anime eyes. Okay, sure.
Anyway. After I was so rudely interrupted. You'll get yours. Don't worry. So, it's mm-hmm. definitely being in a... And it's not even like it's not a busy area. There's lots of stuff around here. It's just... I see pictures that... Diehard Game Fan editor Alex Lucard posts where there's three Pokestops, one on top of another on top of another, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And then, it's not even just that, it's, anytime I bring up the app, any Pokemon in the general area is always three steps away, which is an indication by the game's metric of how far it might be from you. So it's going to be a good walk for you. The only place where they start getting into lower density is in areas that are like busy highway intersections, which is not somewhere you want your kids walking.
No.
And then on top of that, okay, so in the Jersey area, there are all kinds of different monuments that are set up as Pokestops, which makes sense. But there are monuments that are part of the Washington's Crossing Memorial that are all up and down a specific road in the area. One of them is dead center of the middle of a really busy road, and there's no crosswalks nearby. It's like on a median. And there's a Pokestop right on it. And I don't think you can reach that from the sides of the road, so some little kid is going to get smashed doing that. So, not...
You have to be within 100 feet of the Pokestop to...
Yeah, and I don't know what the distance is from the road sides, so it's very possible you can't reach it.
I'm not sure. If you're not going too fast in a car, if you're at, like, a red light and you just happen to be by Pokestop, which I've done before... You can
yeah,
get
that
the
was
person
so you're the reason
the
why the pileup's going on.
No, like so, I'm careful about it. So like, if I do turn it on, like while I'm driving, pretty much I hear vibrate, so I don't even have to look at it. All right, if I just feel vibrate, and then I'll quickly glance down and see what it is. But the reality is, if you're on like a highway, you just can't you can't play it. The most you'll be able to do is take a look at it, like just to see if there's a stop or something at like a red light, but. I won't try to do anything, like if I'm on a red light and a Pokemon pops up, ball, it's red, I'll quickly try to click on it and throw the ball and hope I luck out, because then when I start moving again, I'm like, I just have to throw my phone, because that's it. So, like, you shouldn't do that, don't listen to me. But, I mean, if you do decide to turn it on, play it safe like me, just look at it at red lights, don't, like, try to, like... full-blown play it while you're driving. You'll piss people off and you can probably get in an accident. You find creative ways to get around certain things, you know. But honestly though, so I went to a park. No, it's not safe either. It's not safe at all. That's why I said don't listen to me. Don't don't do it. But if you are going to do it, try to play it a little bit, you know, safe.
She's not condoning it, yeah. But if you are going to do it, pray tell.
Now, there's one...
I mean, If you're at a red light and you're not going anywhere and you're not moving and you quickly like do something, then that's innocent. Like nobody's getting hurt. But if the car is actually moving and you've got it, I would not recommend.
Just make the passenger play for you.
Right? Yeah. I wouldn't recommend if the car is moving. Let me put it that way. Honestly. You know what? Don't play.
Don't play the car.
I was about to say, just stop now, Emily.
Stop now while you still can.
Then there are...
People did get mugged. Basically, I forget where it was at, but there's a thing called Lure that you can put on a Pokestop. So it works similar to the way Incense works, but Incense just works for the player. One player, while... Lure works at a Pokestop for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
There were some guys that purposely put a lure on there to attract a bunch of people and robbed them. Some of the people. I don't think they robbed all of them, but they did pretty much target, you know, Pokemon Go. So, you know, you got to be a little bit careful. I went to a park with my brother yesterday. And everybody was helping each other. That's the one amazing thing I think Nintendo got right. Yeah. I mean, literally strangers were like, hey, you playing Pokemon Go? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, try over there across the street. There's so many Pokestops. You can get this, this, and this Pokemon. Random people didn't even know me. I mean, this is probably the nicest I've seen my area ever been because of Pokemon. So it is kind of, while there are some negative faults to it, it really is bringing... I've made friends. Like, random...
I wish that there was a way to track those friends in the game.
What?
Yeah.
They're saying they're going to add in a friends list in the game at some point in the future.
Are they? Really?
Yeah, but because that's the thing it should have shipped with. Like, the major thing about this game is the power of friendship. Friendship with your Pokemon. Friendship with other trainers. Why can't I actually be friends in the app? You know? And they're going to add that, which is good. I hope they add the ability to trade with people.
They are.
So I can make friends with people at a long distance.
They are going to add the ability to trade. I think that's the next thing they plan on doing. I think it's at some point local trading. No,
like I want it to be like anybody trading. You know,
yeah.
He wants to trade with his friends in Japan.
And I think at some point they're also going to add. I think they said they're going to add. You can fight other people.
Yeah, and the other thing that's kind of disappointing is the Pokemon Go Plus that they announced.
The Bluetooth?
Yeah, the Bluetooth device.
The $35 Bluetooth device?
Yeah, it's not a terrible idea. You know, if you don't want to be being dangerous while you're playing the game, you don't want to have your phone out like a jerk, you can just use the device, and the device will buzz if you're near a Pokestop or a gym. If there's a Pokemon nearby that you've already caught, you can push the button and it'll catch it for you, and it'll buzz when there are new Pokemon nearby.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I just, like, here it is. Like, I just put it on.
I was about to say, she's Nintendo, playing it like me.
Yeah, you have it open, too, man. All this talk about it. I'm like, hey, guys.
Nintendo didn't open up nearly enough pre-orders. They're already sold out, and people were selling them on eBay for $150.
The Bluetooth? Really?
Yep. That's
unfortunate. Yeah. I was thinking about getting it. I guess I have to wait now.
I do have to say, though, one of the good things that's coming out of Pokemon is, like, when you mentioned the lures, I was reading about this the other day. Businesses are using the lures to attract people to come inside their businesses. Like, so pubs, restaurants are bringing people inside, and they're using those lures, which is a good thing.
Some of them are Pokestops. Like, for example... next time I go here, it's going to be crazy. There's a bar across the street. It's pretty much the only one right around my complex that's a Pokestop, and it's a Pokestop. It's right across the street. It's a bar and restaurant. So, like, I'm, like, planning a time that I'm going to go hang out there, and I'm just going to spend the whole time while I'm eating and drinking, playing Pokemon, putting a lure on there, and seeing what comes out at the bar. But, no, I mean, it is. It gets you more business. You pretty much are like, come play Pokemon. Go is okay here. Come visit our, you know...
Well, the fact that they're even having, like, a huge, huge gathering in Philly tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Are they really?
Yes, they are. They're having a huge gathering. Like, so far, 6,000 people are planned to be there. And it takes place at the art museum?
Holy crap, I had no idea. That's insane.
That would be kind of cool. Too bad I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be at work.
Delaware. Me too. I'm going to be at work, like, putting it on, just hoping. The other thing I don't like either is, so I have 9 eggs right now, and 4 of them are, you can't really see, can you now? And 4 of them are in incubators. And the thing about this is this is kilometers, okay? But I've driven a lot, and I purposely would turn, like, the phone on in hopes that while I was driving, and I would just put it down, like next to me while I was driving, and just hope that, like, my eggs would hatch that quickly. No. Okay, so the app is smarter than you, and I'm actually fairly convinced after today they're doing special things to make sure you can't while you drive, because it was acting up on me even at red lights. But then as soon as I got home, it was fine. So I think they're probably starting to, like, put, like, certain, like, I don't know, like, sensors on it, like, when it knows you're going way too fast, you're probably not walking. So just because it doesn't work for the egg hatching thing, you have to physically walk that amount. At least that's one thing I noticed. But I kind of like that. That's unfortunate to me, because, like, people who have to work, like myself, all day, it's really difficult not to, like I the most, like, I walk around is my office. I can walk to my car and back. That's not enough to hatch an egg. You know what I mean?
You can latch it to a fan if you're desperate. as the extra.
I'm not that desperate. You know, like, I want them to hatch, but I know I'm going to have time to get them hatched at some point, because I've been going on more walks lately in general just for exercise. So, I mean, all you have to do is walk around. But
so,
yeah.
Let's hurry up and wrap this up. So we get to our fun segment of the night. Your buy final Pokemon thoughts
Go,
on all of everything.
The end. Buy Pokemon Go. Actually, you don't have to buy it. Download Pokemon Go.
Okay. Yeah, how about you, Mark? Your final thoughts?
It's the best.
I think it's still pretty good, and I recommend downloading it. Just maybe wait a couple of weeks before you consider putting any money into it.
Oh, yeah, by far.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to begin the new segment that we have planned. Well, not new segment. It's just this one-off thing. Maybe we'll have more debates in the future, depending on how fun they are and whatever it is going to be about. So it's going to be Final Fantasy VI versus Final Fantasy VII. Let's cue that intro, shall we? There we go. Goofy little intro on my part. I had a little bit of fun. Okay, so it's going to be me and Mark. Mark's going to be representing Final Fantasy VI. I'm going to be representing Final Fantasy VII. He has been pretty much just been poking jabs at me for the last few weeks about this, saying he's going to cremate me. I've been pretty much just saying I'm at a disadvantage because I like both games. We have Emily, and we got Keith down there at the bottom. They're going to be our moderators. They're going to be keeping us in check and asking us the questions and all that fun stuff. So this is going to be fun.
Whoops.
You forgot to turn your mic on. Way to go.
Yay.
So
go ahead and, if anybody wants to go ahead and explain, like, what the rules are that we're going to be having for this.
Okay, so pretty much is that for time's sake, I'm going to try and keep down each conversation down to 5 minutes. I'm going to ask, I'll pretty much switch it up between you and Mark. Then I'm going to ask you a question, and then pretty much whoever I initially ask the question to, they're going to give their opinion. Then obviously the other person will give a rebuttal. And again, we're going to give you about 5 minutes on each of them. At the end, I mean, since we're actually having a pretty decent turnout on this, on our actual show right now, I would like everybody to really see what they think about that. And also, if you guys have a question that you want to throw into the mix, like if you think you have a better question versus than I do, by all means, throw it in there, because if anything, I got a good amount of them. But long story short, well, obviously, Emily, you're moderating it.
I also do want to note for reference purposes before we get started, in the interest of fairness, we've discussed this in advance. Technical considerations will not be considered. So while we can talk about artistic style, character designs, things of that nature, we will not be considering the actual technical specifications of the game's visuals. So no comparisons between the sprites versus the 3D animation or the quality of how they've held up. The same is true also for the music, since both games use the same general compositions and have the same quality.
And
we're
the
not
same
gonna
composer.
Get into, right, we're not going to get into a debate about whether MIDI versus CD quality audio is better, because that's not really a great place to start from, and it's not a really interesting conversation, I don't think.
All right, and this just came up to my head. Since it's just Final Fantasy VI versus VII, my thing is, should it just be core game versus core game? Because Final Fantasy VII has an expansive universe, and I have not experienced all of those. I mean, we're talking about the movie, Advent Children, you got the prequels, you got the Aftermath game and all that crap. So I was just saying, shall we just keep it to the core game and not mention any of the story elements or anything like that relating to the other games? Or what do you want, Mark?
I mean, I don't care. I can destroy your argument either way.
Well, I'll speak up on this.
Okay.
I think you should talk. That's actually one of my questions. I think you guys should talk about the difference in both storylines and what's in each one, because each game has its own difference, and some stories are really good and they have their pros and their cons, and other ones have their also pros and cons, and the story is a really important part of that game in general.
The only thing that I can say definitively is that it's going to be harder for Robert to respond if we go into the extended universe stuff. No, hold on, because hasn't had exposure to it.
No, you're right.
I was kind of keeping it to the core games.
Yeah, me walking into that argument with knowledge about his own defense that he doesn't have.
Yeah, I guess you're right, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be like he wouldn't be able to respond at all because I'm saying stuff and he can't say, well, no, it's like this because he hasn't seen it. So it's probably
also, right,
better.
Right when you said no, your little avatar guy made the little oh face. It was really funny. That's all.
Yeah, it's probably fair for him if we take Crisis Core, Advent Children, and Dirge of Cerberus and put them aside.
Pre-Crisis, yeah.
Because if he hasn't been exposed to them, he can't defend. And if we're going to be completely honest, the plots in those are so fucking bad.
Yeah, they really
are. Yeah, honestly, Final Fantasy Advent Children wasn't that great of a movie to begin with. They just, hey, we got fan service. That's all it was for an hour and a half.
Yeah, it would not help his case if we started talking, especially Dirge of Cerberus. I would be here all night.
All right, well, yeah, all right. Well, if he isn't, that's fine then.
Well, I'd like to start this one off, if that's all right with you, Emily.
Go right ahead. You're more prepared than I am, so if I'm going to be honest, so.
Okay, well, this one is actually pertaining, and I'm actually going to start off with Hubs on this one because, if anything, I already foresee Mark destroying you on this one, so I've got to give you a little bit of the
damn, is anybody on Robert's side? I feel bad making fun of him now.
No. You know what? Fuck you all. I'm in this.
No, it's a good one versus all. No, it's a good question.
Here.
I'm going to stop talking because I feel bad.
Rob.
Yes.
You will win on at least... one question.
Wow. Just
I said at least. That leaves
no
all
one really. You know what? I think I like my chances now because I'm actually feeling
they
more confident the more you
to
people
win on
speak.
Any of them. I was being positive.
Okay. So moving forward on this is that with Final Fantasy VII and for the lesser known Final Fantasy VI, or not so much the lesser known, but
how's it lesser known? Okay, I have to come to Six's defense now. What the hell?
Let him ask the question.
To be fair, I will say in Keith's defense, Final Fantasy VII has moved somewhere around 11 million units. Final Fantasy VI, nowhere near that much. So he is correct.
Well, that was what I was going to say, is that, if anything, in America, a lot more people know it as Final Fantasy III, so that's kind of where we get a little bit of that disconnect also, is with everything. So, you have amazing, amazing characters in both, at both of your defenses on this one. However, the side characters are really what I wanted to bring up, is that what makes the characters from Final Fantasy VII, and I'm talking like
Yuffie,
Red 13, yeah, Yuffie, that was it, I'm sorry. Yuffie, you know, those characters, what really separates them from really, really great characters that I've seen in Final Fantasy VI? So, pretty much is your argument, what makes Final Fantasy VII side characters better than the Final Fantasy VI characters?
Now, specifically, are we talking playable side characters, or are we talking about, like, you know, just people who you can just throw in your party?
Well, I'm talking about some playable side characters, and again,
right.
You actually have a little bit
more. All right, here we go. Let's go. Okay, so playable side characters. There's only two optional side characters in Final Fantasy VII. That's Yuffie and Vincent, and the reason why I think that they are better than the four side characters that you get in Final Fantasy VI is because they actually have substance and story and development to them, whereas the ones in Final Fantasy VI do not. You got the Yeti, you got Mog, you got a Go-Go, and then you got... Well,
Shadow.
And Shadow, I'll be honest, I'll be frank about Shadow. He is a mystery, and that's what he is supposed to be. So he's left up in a mystery. That's the only good thing about him. As opposed to the other three, they're just there. Yuffie and Vincent all have backstories that intertwine with the story, with all the characters. Yuffie in particular has, you know, a nice little side story pertaining to, you know, her people and the war that they had with Shinra and how she's trying to bring her town and her country back to former glory. Vincent is a man who is racked with guilt, feeling like he is having to punish himself for the rest of his life and that his mutated form is just a result of his punishment and stuff like that. And you see how his character develops and grows and how he interacts with certain characters, and he realizes that he's been punishing himself for all the wrong reasons when he's really not at fault for his things. The other guys in six, they're just there. That's really all they are. They're just there.
Okay. So Mark, now that pretty much Mark or Hubs kind of took a little bit less time than I was expecting. Your rebuttal to this is...
Because it was a short and simple answer, to be honest.
Is that how are the side characters that you see in 6, how are they better than 7? Go.
Well, let's start with Shadow. Shadow is an astonishingly well-developed character, despite the fact that he's entirely optional. Whether or not he stays in your party depends entirely upon whether or not you actually choose to wait for him. Which, essentially, if Shadow does not show up beyond a certain point, that's your fault. Because you didn't wait for him, because you're an impatient asshole. Which is kind of great, and is not a thing that games really explored at that point. Further, you can actually get a lot of story development with Shadow's overall backstory, how it develops and how it goes, if you're willing to put in the effort to stay at different inns around the country. And his backstory actually has an astonishingly large amount of development. How he came into possession of his dog, how he ultimately went down the road that he's going down. All of those are fairly developed plot concepts that have depth and meaning if you're willing to put that effort in to find them. Insofar as the other three characters go, they don't really have any plot behind them at all because they're purely optional characters, which actually works to their betterment in two respects. In the first case, if you miss those three characters, you're not missing very much from the narrative at all. Although if you miss Mog, it's again because you're kind of a jerk because you let him die to go get a stupid item instead of letting the bad guy fall away with it. So, you know, again, that's on you, which is kind of a neat concept. But as far as the Sasquatch and Go-Go are concerned, they're just there. You don't need to get them. There's no specific requirement to get them. And the game isn't putting you into a position where you're missing anything beyond having some mechanically interesting characters in your party. The other point of it is, because they don't have a lot of plot development behind them, they actually come off as stronger characters than the side characters in Final Fantasy VII. Yuffie's entire character dynamic for about 50% of the game is, I steal stuff, which is really fucking annoying when you have to specifically avoid sending her in certain directions or any of the consumables that you might get from it. She'll just fucking take them and pocket them. And if anybody wants to make fun of that character, literally all they do is they talk about what a thief she is, which is not a great defining character trait. Further to the point, the entirety of her extended story revolves around her village and all of the stuff that goes on in there, which is fine, but the game does very little to build up to this, does very little to follow up with it, and it's entirely a self-contained story that ultimately means nothing to the narrative in the grand scheme of things. Vincent's even worse. He's an emo guy who's worshipping a freaking frozen dead chick in the middle of the ocean. How is that an interesting character concept? I'm sorry, rebuttal? I didn't know that we were playing an RPG based around the lead singer from My Chemical Romance.
I am my own monster.
Right, aesthetically, Vincent looks like he's trying too hard. And he seems like the kind of guy who's wielding the weapon that he has and dresses the way that he does to compensate for his tiny, tiny genitals. And Yuffie is fine-ish, I guess. But she's just there. The characters have very little to them except for a couple of very minor plot developments that don't mean a whole lot. Fucking Chris from the original Persona got more character development. And the only plot development that he got was, the bad guy's my brother. Jesus Christ.
Is it my turn for a rebuttal or no?
Actually, it is. Mark's got another 8 seconds.
Nah, I'm good. Okay. I have said everything.
Okay,
I need
in
to say.
in defense of characters like Yuffie and Vincent, Vincent does have a side story element to him that is very worthwhile. You literally find once you find the woman that he supposedly worships in the middle of the ocean in the third disc, you actually find plot elements as to what went on with his backstory and with the creation of Sephiroth and all that other stuff. Yeah, sure, Hojo may have came out and just said, "Hey, I'm the dad." Whatever. He actually, you get a character build up towards him. You feel sympathetic towards the character. As with Yuffie, if you didn't figure it out before, she's comic relief. That's all she is. I steal shit. Look what I did. That's what she is. She's the comic relief character. People thought it was Kate Sith. No, it was definitely her. And I thought both of her side stories were actually pretty satisfactory and very well done to the story. The first one, of course, you're relying to when she actually steals all your material and you get the follower to the town. And then that's where you encounter the fat guy from the Sector 7 slums or whatever his name is. I forget his name all of a sudden, and you actually have to rescue him and fight him up in the mountains. That's just a nice little story, but what I like is the character development with between her and her father and how they have different ideologies, and you actually see that she does have a compassionate side, a determination side that shows that she is a very strong character who is trying to, you know, not only win her father over with the way she's trying to, like, you know, restore the honor and name of the town and all this stuff in her dojo, but the fact that she just has that drive to show that she can definitely, you know, be a very strong supporting character, and that's what I think she is. She has more substance than the three characters that, you know, you claim are stronger for having nothing to them. That's just what I have to say.
Okay, and do you have any final remarks for that one, Mark?
If Yuffie and Vincent had such strong and interesting character development, they wouldn't have put them into a side story game to develop their characters, because nobody had any idea what the fuck their characters actually were, and they could have started from a blank slate.
All right, technicality right there. He broke off and...
I didn't actually say anything about it, I just said that the thing exists.
Yeah. I don't know, judges?
I don't know. You both made pretty interesting, compelling arguments, but the thing is that I think Mark kind of added a little bit more substance, because he was like, listen, if you actually went out of your way to do this, you can, that's with any Final Fantasy game, if you really think about it, that if you go out of your way to find stuff, because, like, even finding Lucrezia in Final Fantasy VII, that was not, like, part of the actual game. You didn't have to go out and do that. But I do like that argument, but you both made very, very good arguments on that one, I will say. So that actually leads us to the next question that I have for you, unless, Emily, did you have one that you wanted to...
I just had a comment. I think one thing to keep in mind is one of the most important things about a debate is information. So if, like, anybody asks you a question about why, like, some characters are, like, better or worse than other characters, one of the things that Mark did really well is he went into detail about why each one. And I think that if you go into more detail, you're more inclined to be better at the debate. I mean, does that make sense?
I think she's saying you suck, Rob.
No,
I don't know. I thought I went into decent debate.
I was about to say, I think you gotta...
That's not what I was saying. I was trying to give advice without calling anybody.
I thought I went into decent enough detail. I didn't go into as extreme detail as Mark did, because, let's be honest, Mark is a hell of a lot more articulate than me. That's probably going to be the one major downfall for me in this debate, is I'm not as articulate and pinpoint as he is.
I pay attention to detail, and I, like, sometimes people want to debate me and they give up and they stop talking to me because they get mad. So I don't give up when you debate me. Like, I will keep going and going and throwing info at you until you're like, oh my god, I'm done. Get this chick away from me. So I guess that's the advice I'm giving you. Out talk,
I'm being coached.
Mark.
Yes.
Out talk, Mark, if you want to win. And Mark, don't let him out talk you. Okay, go on. Go.
Okay, since we've kind of gone over the side characters for that, and this kind of also goes back with overall story on this one, and it kind of is a two-parter to this, kind of to say, is that a lot of people really like the Final Fantasy VII story because, again, that was a lot more mainstream versus Final Fantasy VI. And I'm kind of already starting this argument off on the bad foot for that one. But anyway, is that since VII is getting a lot more remakes on here, you haven't heard anything about VI for as far as that's concerned. Because
there has been a mention by the director of Final Fantasy that he would like to remake VI. So I guess we're going to have to wait and see how well VII Remake does, so...
Well, anyway, more or less, I've heard rumors about stuff like that, but let's say that hasn't happened yet, is that... So, what really stuck out as far as Final Fantasy VII that really made it appeal... Or, and to Final Fantasy VI, what made VII appeal to more fans versus Final Fantasy VI? Go.
Who are you asking I'm actually first,
gonna, me? I'm actually going to start that one with Mark, because I'd actually really like to... hear his argument on that one, then hear yours as far as...
What makes Final Fantasy VII more appealing than Final Fantasy VI?
I thought he was supposed to be defending VI, and I'm supposed to be defending VII.
Yeah, but I'm asking him what makes VI more better of a story versus VII.
Okay.
You're doing a vice versa, right? So, Mark, it'll be what makes VI better than VII, and Hobbs will be what makes VII better than VI, right?
Yes, but what appeals... Okay. What would appeal more people to go to VI that VII clearly has this huge, huge fan base for? What do you think would add more to that? Make an argument on why VI should be remade versus VII.
Yeah, just stick to that.
So, this is going to be kind of an unfair thing because I don't think they should remake VI.
Oh, wow.
Actually. Yeah. Here's my thing, all right? I pay attention to what Square Enix has been doing for years now. And if anything, their core development departments have functionally gotten worse at developing games over the past several years as time has gone on. I mean, compare... Even if I don't like Final Fantasy VII or I don't like parts of it, I'll put it that way. Compare Final Fantasy VII to Final Fantasy X. Final Fantasy X is one of those games that, even if it sold well, came nowhere close to outselling VII. And is generally a lot more divisive of a game than it used to be, okay? Compare 10 to 13. Almost nobody likes 13 at this point, and if they do, they openly acknowledge it's not the best game in the franchise. Yeah, Square Enix, right. In terms of their overall development, has been going on a downward trend with their mainstream titles for years, and the best titles that they're putting out are the Kingdom Hearts games, even though those have some of the weirdest names in existence at this point. A lot of their video game development has become a joke. We can't fit in towns. Everybody has a million pockets and belts. All this other shit. I don't want Square Enix of 2016 touching Final Fantasy VI. I wouldn't have wanted them to have remade it after Final Fantasy VII because they've kind of gone in a direction where the cinematic experience is more important than allowing the characters the opportunity to breathe and exist in their own universe. It's very much about the cinematic, the visual presentation, the movie effect. They've very much been affected by the fact that they want to make these games into a more movie-like experience. And that's fine for what we're dealing with in this day and age. But Final Fantasy VI wasn't that, and I don't want it to become that. I like it as the sort of game that it is now, where it's more character-focused, more character-driven. Everything is split off, and everybody gets their opportunity to develop without it having to be the video game version of No Country for Old Men, but with big eyes and small mouths. I don't need Final Fantasy VI to become that. I don't want it to become that. And I would never, especially after seeing how they remade Setzer in, I want to say, the Kingdom Hearts 2, after seeing what they did to Setzer, I'm not on board. I would not be okay with that. It's just, it would do damage to what Final Fantasy VI is.
Okay, and pretty much he's had that. Now, Rob...
Back at me?
What? Yes, back at you.
Okay, well, first off, I actually agree with Mark that I don't think Final Fantasy VI should be remade. It's a perfect time capsule game in and of itself, and pretty much I agree with everything what he says. I am not a big fan of what Square Enix has been doing. Pretty much, their in-house
Kingdom Hearts.
Yes, I love Kingdom Hearts 2, and I want Kingdom Hearts 3. But right now, at the same time, Square Enix has been pretty much squeaking along on their in-house development, but on the companies that they pretty much have acquired, like Eidos. you know, with the Deus Ex games and the Tomb Raider games. That's pretty much how they're managing to survive at this point. Because, and not to mention constantly re-releasing games on multiple platforms, like Final Fantasy III, Final Fantasy VII, and Final Fantasy IX on Steam. I actually have to say I'm in the small majority who actually believes that Final Fantasy VII shouldn't be remade. I mean, I'll still play it when it comes out. But I think at the same time, Final Fantasy VII is also a time capsule game that really does not need to be remade, touched up, because they're just going to do exactly what Mark said. They're pretty much just going to turn it into a giant movie, an interactive movie. And I really want to just continue to see Square Enix at least go back into a trend where they are making good games like the Bravely Default series, which is actually pretty decent.
Yeah, but, okay, so this is where I will pose it to you, and then, Mark, if you want to rebuttal it, by all means. Why, if you think that 7 is such the concrete game that it is for it, like, and I'm not even taking into effect that there was a, let's, I'll kind of be honest, is that there were a little bit of plot holes in 7, and you could probably make the same argument with 6. I mean, I love both of the stories, to be honest with you, but there were a lot more. Why would they remake 7 and not 6 versus that? And what makes you think because, that they...
Sorry, I think I knew where your question was going. The reason why they're remaking 7 is because it's hands down the highest selling game in the entire franchise. It's also the game that kickstarted practically the RPG phenomenon in the United States with when the PlayStation came out. That's the only reason why they're going to remake it. And the only other reason than that is because a lot of people have... most likely people in my age category have been demanding a remake. I don't know why, maybe because they're really tired of looking at the Popeye arms and the super heavily sharp pixelated characters. I mean, let's be honest, the game didn't age well, but that to me is one of the aesthetics of the game that I find pleasing, because again, it's a time capsule game, and I really just leave the game alone, for God's sakes. I mean, just enjoy it for what it is.
Mark, nothing to add to that whatsoever, or
two things to add to that, actually.
Please, yeah, thank you. First, please.
to answer Robert's question of why people would want it, we live in a very interesting time. Nostalgia is not really a thing that we had as much as a society until around the mid to late 80s, because we have more and more ways of sharing information with one another and greater capabilities of doing so. You didn't see styles come back. You didn't see people actively trying to bring back certain movements until we got to points where we could share more and more information and our culture could share that information directly. These days, it's easy for us to share that sort of nostalgia and for people to try to cash in on it. That's why we have a G.I. Joe movie. That's why Ecto Cooler is available in your local grocery store, except for the Acme around the corner, because Acme sucks. There, that was the reason I said it, actually. But seriously, they need to get the Ecto Cooler and fuck them guys. But it's
usually an exclusive license deal. That's about it.
The point is that we live in a time where it's very... They brought Crystal Pepsi back!
Did they?
Like, they did!
They brought back Surge.
Yeah, it's we live in a time where nostalgia is a big part of our existence. Funko Pop does not exist to cater to 7-year-olds. They exist to cater to us.
Because our generation refuses to grow up.
And right, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but people who want Final Fantasy VII to come back exist as part of that. That's why we have 3 different side stories and anime, multiple comic books, visual books, and everything else associated with Final Fantasy VII, because the people who grow up with it love it. And Square Enix can keep making money off of that, because Lord knows they're not making money off of anything else they're fucking making under their Final Fantasy brand, or not enough to keep them in business. So, yeah, keep riding that train, absolutely. But the other thing to keep in mind here is...
About another minute, Mark.
Yeah, it's the remaking that game itself is... It could be a good idea, but... Not the way that they're doing it now. Not as an action RPG where you're focusing predominantly on one character the way that it is. It's just...
It's split up into chapters.
It's not faithful to what Final Fantasy VII was, but it does give them the ability to patch in the stuff they wrote after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And with actually...
May I interrupt for a second, Keith? To be totally honest, the last couple of questions that you have asked have not really been focusing on 6 versus 7. It's pretty much been, like, questions glorifying the popularity of 7, so...
I was trying to help you, damn it, Hubs. Okay,
I appreciate that, but you can't make it... You can't play favorites just because I'm the host of the damn show, you know?
Okay, now we're actually going to get into a little bit more detail with the stories now, is that both stories had very, very emotional moments, and what makes the emotional moments in 7 better than 6? And that one I'm starting off with you, Rob.
Okay, the what made the emotional moments in 7 greater than 6?
Yeah.
Well, there's actually quite a few emotional moments in there. One is the realization of Cloud as a character and his ups and downs and trying to come to grips with who he is. There's the infamous Eris scene where she meets her demise at the hands of Sephiroth. There's pretty much just, I would have to say, there aren't many handful emotional moments there are in that game as many people think there are. There's only really 2 or 3. And what made Cloud's moment very good is because you realize he's actually a very tragic character. A man who pretty much just had big dreams, you know, kind of like the little guy going off to the big city kind of story. He goes off, he fails, he's afraid of coming home as a disappointment. He ends up, you know, befriending Zack, who, after Sephiroth, you know, goes completely apeshit because he has mommy issues. He befriends Zack. Zack saves his life, and because he's in a weird state of after recovery, he somehow imprints Zack's personality and memories into himself, and he becomes this kind of fake character. And even though some of the characters can see through him, like Tifa, he still manages to play along the charade, not realizing it until, you know, Sephiroth comes along, pulls him apart, and realizes what he does, and then he realizes what's going on, and he's pretty much trying to piece himself back together, and he, you know, comes out of douchebag mode and becomes, like, you know, the real person he is, the real hero he is, and you kind of stick with him and you cheer him on in this entire process. As for Aerith, whichever, I don't give a damn, because the Japanese translation, American translation was still off and on back then in the 90s. She's a character who was pretty much solid all around. She was that little girl, you know, the little innocent little girl who was just going around doing everything she can to help everybody. She realizes she has a greater purpose in life, goes off, does the selfless thing, and everybody just was pissed off at just the way it went down. I mean, obviously, at the end of, what is this, like, by the time her death rolls around, it's literally not even the middle of the game. You're like 20 hours in when it happens, when Sephiroth comes down and just slams the Moss Moon right through her chest. It's a very emotional moment. The music in the game literally is perfect for that scene, and it's a very emotional scene. And then it's afterwards that you realize you find diaries and stuff like that from her father and her mother, and that pretty much just tack on to the moment of the sorrow that hits at hand, which makes her a very tragic character. It makes it very emotional. So it's 6. I don't think there's really any emotional... please. If you haven't played Final Fantasy VII in, like, the last 20 years, fuck you. There's no need for spoiler warnings, so fuck you.
I was thinking the same thing. I was about to say,
To Final Fantasy VI, there's only maybe couple characters that have tragic backstories that are very
here we go
that are very emotional at the least. That would be I guess Saban and Edgar's brotherly connection and how they keep separating themselves, and then there's Locke and his, you know, girlfriend. That's I'm not going to go into the detail because I want to least I'm sure I'm running out of time.
Well, you actually have about another minute left.
Oh, well, shit. Well, you were asking me my questions, and sorry, I'm actually getting kind of
loud.
I'll
take your minute if you don't want it. I've been dying over here wanting to speak for like the last 15 minutes.
Well, you can ask questions too. I mean, it doesn't have to be key.
Oh no, I want to join the debate. I'm horrible. I'm like,
oh my god, why didn't you say something earlier?
Well, no, now I do. You guys are talking, and there's things I want to like say
him
back.
And me. It's not fair.
I know. It's like things I want to say back to you guys, and I'm like, keep your mouth shut, Emily. Don't say a word.
All right, I think we just used up my minute. Go ahead and
let her speak.
All right, let her speak.
Wait, how many more seconds do I have?
Well, though you can, let's say Emily can speak at the end, just to like put, you can put your observations in, so you can say, okay, here's what I think about this, here's what I think about this, so that way we have that
okay.
Like wrap up.
All right, mm-hmm. let me just write down notes in my phone here. I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 56 seconds.
All right.
Yay! All right, 6 seconds.
All right, go ahead, Mark. Whatever you're gonna ask, Mark, go ahead.
He's going to ask me, why are the emotional moments in Final Fantasy VI better than those in Final Fantasy VII?
Yes, I was waiting for Keith to, say that, but...
Yes. We've been talking all over each other for the past, 30 seconds, so it's...
Yeah.
We'll give him a chance to reset, because we've been bullying the poor guy for, 2 minutes now.
Just like a political debate.
Whenever you're ready, Keith, let me know.
Okay, so pretty much starting in just a second is that the emotional events in Final Fantasy VI, what makes them more, again, better than Final Fantasy VII? And you have your 5 minutes starting now.
Final Fantasy VI's emotional moments are largely more believable in context than those on Final Fantasy VII. Let's start from the obvious one, which is the big important deaths within the confines of the narrative. Final Fantasy VII has two. Red 13's father, whatever he is, gets turned to stone or some shit. It's been a while. I don't 100% remember that.
I said, I believe it was his grandfather.
His grandfather. And Aeris gets killed by Sephiroth. Okay. Estona, whatever the fucking item is that removes the ability for people to be turned to stone, and Phoenix Down would resolve both of these fucking problems immediately. Meanwhile, in Final Fantasy VI, the two most important significant character deaths are General Leo and Shadow. General Leo gets the ever-loving, unmerciful shit beaten out of him by Kefka to the point where there's no way he is coming back from that. It's not even a thing that the player can entertain. Phoenix Down would just bring his component parts back to life. You know he's dead. He's done. He's screwed. Further, Shadow only dies if you screw up, and if he does, he dies through free fall, which I don't give a damn how many Phoenix Downs you have. You are not putting that guy's splatty pancake bits back into one person. Further, there are a lot of significant, important emotional moments in Final Fantasy VI. The first time Terra discovers that she's at least part elemental, freaks out and flies away, and the characters ultimately have to help her deal with this concept, is played up as a very big important moment in the narrative. When the world ends because Kefka actually succeeds in his goal, because he is crazier than anybody else involved and does not give a shit about saving anything or protecting anything or ruling anything. He just wants to watch the world burn. Almost no games that weren't in the Mega Ten franchise, which hadn't brought games to America at this point, had done that kind of a concept. And the next game that we saw that did anything like that, I think, was Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne. It's a big deal. That's not a thing that villains get to do. Even with one of the greatest villains of all time in Lunar, he didn't get to win. Kefka won. Bad. And the characters had to pick up their lives and say, shit, now what? Seals' suicide attempt, if you fail dealing with her situation, the death of Cid, the potential death of Shadow. There are so many meaningful and important moments in that game, and even with people who are alive. The honorable British guy whose name I can't remember.
Cyan.
His entire narrative, his family dies because of these bastards, and that haunts him to the point where if you go to the right place and follow through his narrative, he actually gets fucked over by the ghosts. And they screw with him, and you have to save him. It's just, I can keep going. I can keep going. There are so many important big moments because every major character gets a significant amount of story time. It's not a contest.
Everybody gets story time in even Final Fantasy VII, but unfortunately, we're talking about the emotional impact stuff. So, I mean,
yeah,
there's
the
definitely
emotional impacts are big.
Some of the emotional impacts are. Big in Final Fantasy VII as well, but they're completely different. Yeah, someone's not moderating.
Let Mark finish.
No, I'm done. I'm finished. I'm just saying let Keith do his thing to start up his timer and whatnot for Hubs' rebuttal.
Oh, I was about to say, and Hubs, I'll actually give you 2 minutes on the I'll give you 3 minutes on the rebuttal for that one. Your rebuttal, as far as pretty much Mark,
wait,
just
you
kind
said
of
3 minutes, right? Because I heard 30. You're not giving him 30 minutes.
30 minutes? I don't think I can even feel half 30. Of that.
I was like, wait.
No, he's got three. He's got three.
Okay, all right.
All right. So in regards, I mean, if you want to look at emotional impact of other characters, like you got Cid in Final Fantasy VII. This is a guy who, again, hopes and dreams and all that stuff. You say there's no characters with any believable. Story elements. Cid was a guy who was a pilot for Shinra with aspirations of going to space, and all of that, pretty much because he cared about his assistant, because his assistant wanted him to not die on launch, which is, you could see the frustration with him about his hopes and dreams, and then Shinra just pulling the plug on him because he aborted the mission to the last second. And then, in terms of the emotional impact, when you finally see his character arc completed, when he makes it into space, you see how exceedingly happy he was, and then you see how he finally turns around and he's actually just happy that his assistant was around to actually, you know, save his life because, oh, look, the thing she was checking on nearly killed him when he was in space in the final arc of his story. So, I mean, that was a good emotional impact, in my opinion. I actually did feel a little bit of an emotional impact with the entire story arc of Nanaki, or Red 13, because, the father being turned to stone, and why didn't they cast Soft on him or whatever? I mean, you don't know how long he's been petrified for, so who knows if the effects of Soft would even work on him. On top of that, you can't exactly say that he doesn't have any emotional impacts. I mean, this is a guy who, for the longest time, had no idea who he was or what the purpose of his mission in life was. He was just a wandering animal just trying to figure out what he is, because he knows he's like an ancient being that's there to protect, but he doesn't know what he's protecting. And then he realizes he has a greater purpose, and that's why he continues along with your journey. And his grandfather, some floating thing without legs, is pretty much just his guidance, and like his little Yoda, because he disappears later on after he dies. So, I mean, when his grandfather passes away, you feel really bad for him. You see him howling and all that stuff. He has great emotional impact.
See, now this is the fight that I was looking for right here. Like that. Now that was both. Now, Emily, how about you chime in?
Do I get a?
Yes, you can get a rebuttal. Yes, fine, rebuttal, Mark.
Now, I could keep going on with more emotional stories from Final Fantasy VI, but instead, I actually want to address the elephant in the room with my couple of minutes here and note that you didn't actually do anything to justify the death of Aeris, because I think deep down inside, you know what we all know, it sucked.
Aside justified from Aeris? Can I get a chance to do that?
No, you already used it.
I was about to say
used. Alright, I used up all my time.
But aside from the fact that it doesn't work within the confines of the narrative very well, i.e., these people have been shot, and you're telling me one sword stab couldn't be Phoenix downed. The fact of the matter is, Final Fantasy VI does this better, but so many other games do it better, too. Vi, Pottle gets shot through the shoulder, falls off of a bridge into a running river, and is dragged away. If he isn't dead, I'd be fucking surprised. Phantasy Star 2.
His name is Pottle, by the way, not...
Pottle. His name is Pottle. P-O-T-T-L-E.
Yeah, I told you, Pottle.
Final Fantasy, Phantasy Star 2. Nii is killed, sacrifices herself to defeat her sister Nii first, and when they get to the point where they can resurrect her, the system says her data has been deleted. Not only is her death meaningful and important, it advances the plot because the computer system deleted her. Why? And you have to go track that down. Phantasy Star 4. Alice is killed in battle by the name of the wizard, I forget. Using a powerful magic that can only be defeated by an item that they have to go get, and time is justified in bringing her back, specifically because it takes them too long, and the magic corrupts her system, making it impossible for her to be resurrected appropriately. These are deaths that are justified in the narrative. Aeris is just praying, and a dude gasps her through the stomach. How am I supposed to believe that that's a legitimate death, when, again, these are characters who had a house fall on them at one point, have been shot multiple times. You're telling me one sword could kill her, especially when she's as magic as she is? It also doesn't help that Aeris herself is kind of a cipher as a character and gives the player very little to actually empathize with. You can feel bad because she was your core healer who died, and if you project on her that you want to protect her, you can. Taken as a character, she doesn't really give you a lot of a reason to give a shit that she died. Done.
If we're going to talk about actual characters in the future, I definitely have something to answer all that, but we can go on.
Well, if anything, that's that. And Emily, did you want to? Did you have any questions, or did you want to weigh in?
I want to hear what she has to say.
All right.
Because I heard that at the end.
I was about to say, I heard something.
Honestly, I wrote some of those down, but it's not anything as specific character-wise that you guys said. But in regards to the questions, so here's the thing. So I've been really busy lately, and I didn't realize till today that I had to come up with questions. So I wrote up a bunch of questions, all right? And then Rob and Mark had this little conversation and pretty much about, like, what they told you, like, they didn't want to include in the debate, and pretty much all my questions pertains to that in some sort of way. So that's that. However, I do want to talk a little bit about, let's see my notes here. What did I write down? I have a notes section on my phone and I was writing in it. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. And I am going to say, who is to say which game has more emotional characters and situations than others? Because I feel like you're making that face at me, Keith. But I have a point I'm getting
at. Okay. That's it. They just answered that.
Well, that she's using it from the justification perspective
What I'm saying is, I think that emotional, like, impacts are kind of like something that's, like, really an important aspect in the Final Fantasy franchise. There's always different, like, their storylines are always very, like, in-depth, and there's always different emotional, like, big things happening, like, throughout the game. So, to try to break it down and say, well, this person's situation is more, emotional than this person's situation, and this has more of an impact on them than this, like, if you think about it from a psychological standpoint, how do you know? How do you know that this situation in this game affected this character more than the other situation would affect that other character more? Because the reality is, you just don't know. You aren't these characters. You're the player playing these characters. At the end of the day, their personalities are the gamer, if that makes sense.
I actually have a rebuttal to that.
Sure.
And it is very simple. I do understand where you're coming from and existing in the world of the narrative.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how to explain it. I was thinking it, and I'm like, how do I say this?
But I totally get where you're coming from. It's, narratively speaking, the question is, how do we gauge the merits of these characters' existences, their experiences, their emotions? How do we judge one as being more important than the other? Because the characters experience these in their own way. And exactly. My response to that is, that's not our job as players. That's the job of the creator. If the creator has ultimately failed to convey this through artistic language, that's on them. And I understand where you're coming from, and I do agree. It probably is a lot more is equally hurtful for a character like Cloud to watch a woman that he has been brainwashed into loving die, especially since, and this should not be counted as part of the debate, they actually go into that over at least two of the storyline narratives in later products. So clearly that had a significant negative effect on him. But the problem is that the creator chose to convey that over two additional products and not in the game that they were writing. In the game that they were writing, he fucked Tifa behind a spacecraft, or whatever the shit it was. So, Cloud, as a character, is not projecting his hurt within the
context. Hey, man, I mean, everybody handles grief in their own way.
I mean, they do, but it's the author is not projecting their story in the way that makes Cloud seem like a truly sympathetic character dealing with that situation. When the possibility exists that Locke might be dead, Seals projects appropriately, and when they find out he might be alive, she makes it a mission to go find that stupid bastard and figure out what the hell he's been doing. The writer understood this and projected it, and this isn't anything to the game, this is just authorial intent. The author of Final Fantasy VI did a fundamentally better job of creating this story than did the author of Final Fantasy VII. And I don't even have to use that as an argument between the two of us, because I can prove that's true, because which game is better, Final Fantasy VIII or Final Fantasy IX?
Nine.
Who wrote Final Fantasy IX? The writer of Final Fantasy VI. Who wrote Final Fantasy VIII? The writer of Final Fantasy VII.
Hey, everybody can have a bad day.
Right. But the thing is that 6 and 8 and 9, we can both agree, are at least well-written, whether you're arguing in favor of 7 or not. You would not argue that 8 is a well-written game.
Even though you have many times.
I'm not the one pointing this out. I'm just saying to you.
2 minutes, Mark.
Oh, I'm not debating anything here. I'm just saying, like, It's the writer's job to convey this.
Can I keep talking, or is there more questions?
All right, yeah, we're going to continue.
No, for real, though, is there more questions? Because, you know, I was going to speak at the end, but you asked me my thoughts on that. And I wrote in here, play devil's advocate, because I thought it would be fun. But that's honestly the thought that came in mind while you guys were talking about that. I'm just like, well, who are they to say who feels them? I don't know. I thought it'd be an interesting topic, but that's besides the point.
All right.
That's fair.
Continuing it's on.
Okay, and this will actually probably be the last and the final question for the night for this one, is that clearly every single Final Fantasy game has a villain. Every single game always has a villain for this particular one. I want to hear the argument on why is it that Sephiroth is better than Kefka and vice versa. How is Kefka better than Sephiroth? Because I want to hear this one, especially from both of you. Because you both clearly have very good loves for both of these characters. So tell me, Hubs, how is it that Sephiroth is the superior villain versus Kefka?
Okay, first off, we're going to start off with Sephiroth being the fact that as he begins, he is a character of tragedy. And you actually feel sorry for him and everything that happens to him up at Nibelheim. When he figures out that, when he thinks that Genova is his mother and he goes apeshit and kills people, so you feel sympathy towards him. And this is something me and Mark have talked about before. However, it is when he returns that you realize that he is the ultimate douchebag. He realizes he is not an ancient. He realizes that he is nothing more than just a genetically... he's a genetic test tube baby of Genova herself. A creature who came down from the planet who just wants to wreck shit, kill stuff. Okay? That's pretty much her purpose. She goes from planet to planet... devours life, eats up the planet's life force, and move on. That's what she does, and that's what Sephiroth was going to continue to do. You do not, however, feel any sympathy for him from then on, because, yeah, he kills Saris, who was the one person at that point who could actually stop him because of her connection to the planet, because the ancients, when they were still alive, were able to contain and stop Genova. Sephiroth is a calculating, manipulative, ruthless evil bastard who pretty much mindfucks everybody that he knows has the Genova cells in her. And that's pretty much every soldier that's within Jinra, or Shinra, because they all get injected with that Mako energy, which pretty much has her DNA mixed in with the planet as it circulates the planet. He has pretty much managed to get his way. He needed the black materia. He didn't know where it was located because it was well hidden by the ancients. So he used Cloud to manipulate Cloud to get him the black materia. He used Aerith's death to be the cataclysm to move him along to the crater where he is located, as he is, you know, his body is, you know, being brought back together and all that crap. Kefka, he is a psychotic, brilliant, evil motherfucker. He accomplishes his goal. He does. He kills his emperor. He moves the statues of the goddesses to attain the power of being a god. And then he destroys the world. And then he does nothing for the rest of the game. That is the truth. He does nothing. He makes a speech at the very end saying, oh yeah, I'll just burn a village down here. I'll burn a village down there. I shift the continents around. And I'll just call it a day. And that's all he does. Literally, who knows how much time has gone by. You don't even really see much in terms of the wake of his destruction, of his destructive nature. This is a guy who says he wanted to go around destroying the universe, and he destroys a few villages, he moves the continents around. That's about it. That's all you see him do. He is a great villain for the first half of the game, and that's it. After that, it's just... you concentrate on the heroes. You don't really see anything else in regards to him. You just hear people talking about, oh, we have to rebuild. Everything looks like it's been rebuilt, so who knows how much time has passed and why Kefka's just being a lazy fuck. He doesn't explain it. He never does. He's just sitting there talking about how he wants to toy with people and stuff like that, and you don't see that at all. This is the guy who is completely psychotic in the brain. He doesn't have any fucks to give, and when all is said and done, I guess he's just lazy too. So I'm done there.
Okay. So pretty much, Mark, is that pretty much what Hubs is saying is that Sephiroth is nice, cold, calculating, and that pretty much he gives more of a story and he gives you a better feel for a villain for this one. What is your remarks as far as that versus Kefka, or everything that that Robert just went over versus Kefka? And what does Kefka bring more versus Sephiroth?
Three things. One, a villain is ultimately judged by their motivations and the things that drive them into action. Kefka is much more of an objectively evil character, whereas Sephiroth is a much more sympathetic character. Now, Robert makes the point, and it is certainly fair, that you can only sympathize with Sephiroth for too long of a period of time, but the point is that Sephiroth's original backstory is that he is a guy who was dicked around by Hojo genetically, thought he was a really great warrior, discovers that his mother is a weird monster, and through a combination of her mental tampering and him just realizing, fuck, I'm crossbred with some of the worst shit on this planet, he loses his damn mind, and ultimately devotes himself to fulfilling the promises of his weird alien mommy thing. It's hard to not feel at least a little bit emotionally tied into the idea that, damn, this guy got royally boned. Kefka, on the other hand, is never really given any sort of a sympathetic or empathetic backpoint. Kefka is just, I just want to watch the world burn. Sephiroth, at least, is given that certain amount of, he is a tragic villain. He was screwed over. And to be perfectly honest, he does some things that are bad. Kefka poisons an entire village, an entire castle, excuse me. Kefka blows the damn world up. It's not really comparative, because anything that Sephiroth did, Kefka did better, or worse, depending upon the context. Second, a villain is measured not just by their own actions, but by the actions of the people who directly oppose them. Kefka is dealing with the cast of characters who, as we've established previously, have fairly robust backstories and reasons for wanting to kill him, including several people who were directly fucked over because of the things that he chose to do. And they ultimately rise together to destroy him because he destroyed a lot of the shit that they were kind of living in or in love with or what have you. And it ultimately, their sacrifice, their losses elevate Kefka as a villain. They make him stronger. They make him more interesting than if he was just a guy doing evil shit. Sephiroth, by comparison, 50% of his villains are the people who are also fucking up the world and turned him into the monster that he is. Yeah, the Genova Corporation, or whatever,
Shinra
Corporation, isn't great guys, and it's hard to feel any kind of empathy towards their part of the plot when they're bigger dicks than he is in a lot of cases. Like, how am I supposed to really hate this guy when he's also blowing up Shinra, who are kind of dicks? Because, I mean, like, Hojo didn't just make Sephiroth. He also tried to make Aeris breed with a cat monster. That's weird. And I can't necessarily hate Sephiroth too much because he hates these guys that I also hate, in a lot of cases, more than I hate him. It also doesn't help, again, that the cast of Final Fantasy VII is not, for a while, the best cast to be opposing the strong villain. Cloud's kind of a jerk. Aeris gets a limited amount of character development relative to the amount of time that she is on screen. It's harder for them to make me care about killing Sephiroth until about the final quarter of the game. And to the final point, which is that Kefka doesn't do anything, Kefka fucking won! What the fuck else does he have to do at that point? Oh, yeah, he wants to go destroy the universe. He doesn't have to go do it right now. He blew up everything. At that point, he is HNIC, okay? He is done. Fuck you, I won. Sephiroth gets to do more because he is still trying to accomplish his goal. Kefka finished. He won. At that point, it's like, all right, you know, if you guys want to come get me, bring it. I don't care. Sephiroth is still working when Kefka already had his shit in line. Done.
And you actually had a minute to spare on that one. Hubs, I would actually like to hear your rebuttal to Mark's interest.
Alright, in response to the fact that he says characters that Kefka directly affected that makes them want to kill him, Sephiroth does have that connection with several of the main characters. He has Tifa and Cloud, and there goes Mark's picture. Cloud and Tifa, he murdered an entire town. I mean, sure, Kefka murdered an entire castle, or poisoned an entire castle. He murdered an entire town. He lit it on fire. He stabbed everybody. He killed Cloud's mom right in front of him. He almost killed Tifa right in front of Cloud. On top of that, he after manipulating Cloud and practically using him to help find Aeris, who willingly sacrificed herself, because, I mean, seriously, why do you kneel down and pray and smile when you know you're going to practically, she knew she was going to die. This guy wanted to make sure that he mind-fucked everybody to the point where he knew he was completely in control. I mean, this isn't a game where, at the same time, you got Final Fantasy VI, where Kefka is attaining godhood. They don't have that kind of element in Final Fantasy VII. They don't have statues of the goddesses that can be, you know, shifted around for somebody to attain ultimate power. Sephiroth has to work practically harder for his goals, and he's got his entire cast and crew of people who pretty much have been screwed over by both Shinra and by Sephiroth, who are hunting him down and trying to stop him in every step of the way. And then on top of that, he's also got the planet trying to fight him off, you know, when they unleash the weapons.
Still 1 minute.
Kefka, I mean, sure, you can definitely make the argument that Kefka's just like, okay, you know, I'm going to call it a day, I can do whatever I want. At the end of the day, he still gets killed. He's a god. He is dead. Explain that. Seriously. How can you be a god and still be killed? Sephiroth at least is believable in the fact that you can approach him and attack him, because at the same time, he is still, like, you know, rebuilding himself after he fell down a chasm, and who knows how many bits of his body were spread across the world in the live stream. He's not whole. He's obviously not 100%. So he was more of an approachable villain in the very end to take on. Whereas you have a guy who made himself a god, and people are still able to kill him in the end. This is a man who pretty much says, "Hey, come at me, bro." Oops. So go right ahead. I'm done.
All right. And any final thoughts on that one, Mark? And then
I'm going to start with a simple one. Did I seriously just hear that the argument was
3 minutes
that Sephiroth is better than Kefka because his magical MacGuffins work differently and the concept of gods are different?
Yeah, pretty much.
Dude, no, no, no. Magical MacGuffins differ from universe to universe, and the magical MacGuffins in 6 and in 7 are both justified within the confines of what they can do.
Exactly.
The fact that you're saying that, well, these MacGuffins are better or worse is nah. The text supports that they're both fine in context. That's I can't. Further, they establish in Final Fantasy VI that you can kill gods pretty early on when they actually kill one of the creatures living within Materia, and god is a relative term. I mean, Iron Man is a god to the people of the Marvel Universe. That doesn't mean he's the literal god. And in the Megaten franchise, you can kill the literal god. God is only as important a term as you make it out to be, and in the world of Final Fantasy, it doesn't really mean so much that he's invincible and invulnerable and impossible to be killed. It just means he's a hell of a lot more powerful. So if anything, the fact that they're able to beat him after all that's said and done actually kind of makes their feat more impressive than beating Sephiroth, who didn't actually achieve godhood.
But it makes his feat more believable.
You don't get to talk.
I was about to say, he still has 1 minute.
Then the simple fact of the matter is that Kefka wins, gets more powerful, and the characters still have to ultimately strike him down and do. He wins harder, gets more powerful, and makes the defeat that he suffers at the hands of the protagonists more interesting and engaging because of how hard he wins and how much power he gets. Sephiroth didn't even succeed all that hard. He killed, like, a bunch of people, sure, but he didn't win in the grandest sense of things. And honestly, in comparison, they still kind of almost lost because Meteor still almost kind of blew everything up. So if anything, the characters in Final Fantasy VI kind of won harder.
I guess I'm not allowed to have a rebuttal. I mean, no, you said this is the last question, right? From you, anyway.
This is the last question for me, and I'll give you
for a mark.
Okay, screw it.
Uh-oh, what did Jim...
Can I ask it? All right, I have a question for Mark. You're throwing around that God word.
Yes.
All over the place there, and so I'm just curious, how do you think the villain would fend against Kratos? My favorite god.
One sec.
Uh-oh. Saying. We've been put on hold.
Wait, really?
Yeah, he had a phone call.
Of course, because he didn't want to answer my question.
Because nobody actually listens to me when I tell them don't call me. But anyway.
Seriously, though, like, I love God of War, and you were throwing out gods, and I'm surprised you didn't bring him up. So I'm curious how you think that, like,
No, I'm pretty sure Kratos. I'm pretty sure Kratos would probably be able to beat Kefka, despite the fact that he is incredibly magically powerful. At the end of the day, despite the size difference sprite wise, he's probably still standard dude sized. And Kratos himself is technically also a god, so I'd say he'd probably get pretty messed up, but Kratos would probably win. They'd all get killed by Golgo 13, though.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing at this guy in the chat. I'm sorry. I'm listening to what you're saying.
Yeah, AFN.
Oh, Steven. Yeah, no, Kratos would probably win. Kratos would probably.
Okay. I was just curious. All right, that was my question.
Ubs, do you think that Kratos could definitely win against Sephiroth, or do you think Sephiroth would definitely give him a good run?
All right, let's look at Greek mythology for a second. Zeus is a god who has created many other gods. He even created Kratos. And Kratos, what did Kratos do? He came back and he stabbed that dude in the eye several times till he was dead. I think he can kill Kefka without a problem.
No, Sephiroth.
I was talking about.
You're asking about Sephiroth.
Oh, you said Sephiroth? Yeah.
What, you're saying
Sephiroth is not a god for starters. I mean, sure, Kratos might kill him, but then again, there's those Genova cells, so he's going to rebuild himself at some point.
Well, I was about to say.
No, technically, and this shouldn't be part of the debate, but technically, Sephiroth needed three of his weird, like, spermy clones to, like, bring him back, and then Cloud killed him again anyway.
Yes, point two.
How fucking sad is that, by the way, that, like, it took the whole team to kill him the first time, you had your weird spermy guys bring him back, and then Cloud kicked his ass single-handedly. Damn.
We can have this debate again once it digs into Norse mythology, since that seems to be where the God of War franchise is heading, but we can talk about that on another episode.
Okay.
Okay, pretty much is that you both, like, I'm still at the same juncture that I was at before, because I, like Robert, I both love 7 and 6. I think that 6 was a little bit more of the superior game, again, in my particular thing, but you both made awesome, awesome arguments. Emily, who do you think, honestly, gave a pretty compelling argument for their particular game on this one? Because I'm at a little loss, because I think they both made pretty interesting points. Be honest with you.
I mean, I knew for a fact that Mark was going to be able to smack me around. I just didn't actually think I would, you know, manage to actually, you know, have something to say at the end. I was surprised I could even say half that crap.
You know what? I don't know. I mean, it's tough because both of them had, you know, their own arguments, and you know they were valid points and arguments, and you know nobody hesitated, nobody was. Mark Spitzer's doing a weird thing again.
It's my computer's complaining I don't have antivirus protection, and I'm like, no, I have antivirus protection. You're stupid, stop doing that,
damn you Windows 10.
It's funny because I like when you were saying that as your avatar's face was going along with what you're saying, but it's tough because they both had really good points, but I mean, yeah, you know what? I have to agree. I mean, you know, Mark definitely did seem to, like, he had a little bit more passion, but I think that's how he speaks, just because, like, when he gets really into something, like, he gets kind of, like, as Face's name put it, amped up and, like, really, really emotional. I guess more emotional about it, and it seems like Rob was more like, I don't want to say he wasn't emotional, but he was more
I was very unprofessional. I don't think I cursed this much in a long time, to be honest.
No, but like, I mean, like, I don't want to say you were like more monotone, but you just more like didn't have a lot of emotion. You were just kind of like speaking almost like, you know, I don't want to say professionally since you were cursing, but you had more of that. You had more of that tone. Does that make sense?
I had a lot of passion. Let's just say that passion. Doesn't mean I was articulate, but
I know you have passion. I guess, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but
you know what? AFN just said it perfectly right there. As good as I could with a gun with limited ammo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Keith. It's tough. I don't know if there should be a round two. I don't know if the round two should be held off until Final Fantasy VII, the remake, does come out.
I pretty much think, if anything, we should just nail it all in one go. I mean, there's really no point for another debate. If anything, there should be a debate on another set of games.
I don't want to have to choose.
All right, guess what? let's look at the audience. You decide who the winner is.
Yes, you decide.
Do you have the ability to put up polls in
Twitch? The winner is you.
Do you have the ability to put up polls on Twitch, Robert?
No, they have not implemented something like that yet. They only have that at Hitbox. Oop, I shouldn't have said that.
Hey.
Eh.
You think that would be a feature they would add in, really?
You would think so. I mean, yes. So, I guess we consider this debate at the end.
Man, I mean, they're not even. They don't want to pick.
Or how about this? How about this? Shall we? Any final words?
Right.
Or
Rob and Mark, pick a number between 1 and 10.
10.
Whoever is the closest to the number wins. What did you say, Rob?
10.
Okay, Mark.
8.
Mark wins. It was 6.
I'll take that.
Gee,
six. You picked the highest number. I can't. He picked lower. I can't help.
Yeah. What if I said
Final Fantasy VI is better?
What if you said what?
Yeah. What if I said 7? You said 6. I'm like, oh, gee, that doesn't show any favoritism.
If you said 7 and he said 8, you would have won because I picked 6.
Maybe.
No, but seriously, I'm just joking around. Obviously, yeah. It's difficult to. Pick which
I was about
one.
To say that was a really difficult one, but I'll probably go on a limb and say that.
You know what? I'm going to just say that Mark probably won this debate overall because he was way more articulate than me. I mean, if I was a little bit, I'm not saying I wasn't prepared. I'm just not as.
I think Mark
good at forming an argument as he does.
Because Shayna just said in the chat room that she has not played either of the games, but from listening to Mark's argument, she would actually go out and play 6. So. I'm going to have to say Mark won this one.
How about any last words? Like, Mark, me, just say some of our favorite moments about 6 and 7. Like, what we like
most. I was about to say, final art, not even.
No, that's not fair. I actually came in under a minute in a couple of cases.
Damn. Okay.
Well, I do need to get going soon.
Though. All right. Well, then I guess we'll just call it a night then.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to ruin the fun, but I stayed on longer because I felt bad.
As you should for missing two episodes.
Hey, in my defense, you pushed back the one late, and that was too late because I had to be up early. And the other one, I was in Florida. Beautiful.
Did we just spend like 20 minutes telling her that she was okay and that she didn't need to feel bad about it?
Yeah, why are you trying to make me feel bad?
Why are you heel-turning, Robert?
I never said any of that, to be truthfully honest. Or wait, no, I did tell her that she shouldn't feel bad for being in Florida.
That's true.
And on that note...
Yeah. Anyway, so, go ahead and feel free, pick who you thought was the winner, but truthfully honest, in the end, they're both amazing games that everybody should really experience. Remakes notwithstanding, whether they happen or not, for 6. With me as always, guys, this is Mark B, Gamer Keith, and Jamillion. I'm Fight Club Hubs. Thank you once again for tuning in for GVN Live. Everybody, you have